This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you, taking your calls. Detroit Johnny in Taylor, Michigan. Hey, Johnny, what's up?
Hey, Professor, how you doing today?
I'm alive and kicking. I'm heading out to Minneapolis this afternoon for the Blue State Ball at KTNF on Saturday night and Sunday morning breakfast with some of the listeners there. I'm very much looking forward to it. So,
fantastic. You know,
yeah. So I'm doing good. I hope you are too, Johnny.
I'm doing great. My new house, and I've got three Democrats that Agent Orange should be deadly afraid of.
Interesting.
And that's,
good.
Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and a lady whose husband was in the Senate for 75 years, Debbie Dingell.
Yeah.
I want her to run for president. She's got a voice, an incredible voice.
Yeah, yeah. Debbie Dingell knows what she's doing.
Yep. Yeah, man. If she'll pick Bernie as her vice president, but he's running for president, so maybe we can flip that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that's part of my dream cabinet.
Is that what you call it out? Is Debbie Dingell and Bernie Sanders? Seriously?
Oh, yeah. That was part of it.
Yeah.
The other part is I got a new dream cabinet.
Okay.
You know, Ralph Nader, Speaker of the House again. Mike Papantonio, Attorney General. Vice President Bernie, or vice versa, Debbie Dingell, president,
yep.
The first female president.
Yep.
And of course, you and Amy Goodman could be Supreme Court judges.
Thank you, thank you, Johnny.
I've turned on a lot of people to your show and Democracy Now. That's what the easiest way to get through to these people is say Google Democracy Now, please.
Yeah.
Just watch the actual news.
Yeah, Amy Goodman does. The best straight up news. She is the Walter Cronkite of our era, and frankly, better than Walter Cronkite, because she will push boundaries that Walter Cronkite never would have gotten near, and she's absolutely a genius and a genuine reporter and a genuine patriot. Johnny, great stuff all the way around. Thank you for the call. Oh, one thing, you were talking about a cabinet, Johnny, just reminded me, and I want to mention this periodically. Somebody called in to this show in the last month or so, I think it was during February, and pointed out to me that, it was our friend down in Mexico, in San Cristobal, Mexico, Nicholas, yeah, who also is in our YouTube chat room every day. He said that one of the things that AMLO, the current president, the Bernie Sanders of Mexico, who won the election and is now the president, one of the things that he did once he got past the primary, essentially, when he was the nominee on the progressive side, of his party, against the conservative for president of Mexico, one of the things he did is he pre-announced long before the election who he intended to put in his cabinet, which it just completely shifted the conversation away from horse race nonsense and who's ahead and who's behind and blah de blah de blah and personality and all this stuff, and started focusing the entire political conversation across Mexico on actual issues. Well, if so-and-so is going to be the cabinet secretary for education, that's going to mean this. And so so-and-so is in charge of the Labor Department, it's going to mean this. And if so-and-so is in charge of defense, then that's going to mean this. And what about the other guy? What about the right winger? Who's he going to put in? And that cemented his win. And, whoever it may be, you're talking Bernie, and I get that. We got a lot of Bernie fans on this show. Bernie was on this program for 11 years. I'm a Bernie fan. But I'm also going to be all in for whoever wins the Democratic nomination, period, full stop. And whoever that is, absolutely, I would encourage them to use that same strategy that you were just talking about, Johnny, that AMLO, the president of Mexico, did successfully, which is once the, maybe even at the convention, once the convention is over, in any case, and the nomination is secured, then roll out your cabinet and say, and this cabinet is going to reflect my values. You're going to see diversity in the cabinet. You're going to see diversity of ideas. You're going to see, I would like to see consistency of ideas, across a progressive spectrum. And this is going to tell you what we're going to do based on who these people are. I think, and Johnny, thank you for the call. I think if people knew that Donald Trump was going to put the woman who had caused Michigan to lose about half their public schools in charge of education. And by the way, she just yesterday announced a new $5 billion that she wants from the federal government to give to private schools to further destroy public education in the United States. If Trump had announced that he was going to put a skeezy bank owner, billionaire, who it was, by according to Forbes magazine, a grifter. That's the word Forbes magazine used to describe. Jesus, name just popped out of my head. You know, our Secretary of Commerce, short, withered up little old guy who's the billionaire, right? Okay. If Trump, I think people would have said, what? If Trump had announced that he was going to put Steve Mnuchin, the guy who was the foreclosure king in California, who could have been prosecuted, who otherwise, you know, if Kamala Harris hadn't cut him a pass, he'd be in prison right now as Secretary of the Treasurer. You tracked it down, Sean?
Wilbur Ross.
Thank you. If Trump had said, these are the people I'm going to put in my cabinet, I think America would have said, are you crazy? We're not going to elect you. Anyhow, Ty in Hampton, Virginia. Hey, Ty, what's on your mind? Anything goes Friday.
Good afternoon, Tom. I've enjoyed listening to you all these years and reading your books.
Thank you.
I'm a retired one percenter, still doing work, though getting up every morning more excited than I have in my career.
Cool.
I just wonder if you would bring us up to date and comment on gun control with respect to the ability to take the manufacturing industry to task, much like the lawyers did with the tobacco industry, and use that money to garner a force to eventually structure gun control. I personally don't have a problem with guns. I think you have all the guns you want, but they should be controlled. I would control them like Japan. But that said, it needs a structure. And who is working on that, and what are the major hindrances today that prevent the citizenry to go after the gun industry to take them to task?
The main thing that is preventing citizens from going after the gun industry is the money of the gun industry being poured down on largely Republican members of Congress, who therefore, you know, carry the water of the gun industry. And that you can thank, for that you can thank five right-wingers on the U.S. Supreme Court, who in 76 in Buckley, in 78 in the First National Bank versus Bilotti, in 2010 with October 2010 with Citizens United, in 2013 with McCutcheon, who said that if an industry or a billionaire want to own a politician, that's perfectly legal. And for that matter, if they want to own a political race by pouring hundreds of millions of dollars, even billions of dollars into a political race, that's perfectly legal too, because corporations are people and they have First Amendment rights. With regard to actual litigation, which I think is really where you were going, Ty, I agree. I think that the gun industry could be taken down with the kind of litigation that took down the tobacco industry. And I don't know. I know that there are a number of lawsuits against a number of gun companies, gun manufacturers, and against the National Rifle Association for that sort of thing. But I don't know if there is a concerted effort across the United States that involves attorneys general joining hands like they did with tobacco, with private law firms like Papatonio's law firm, going after private tobacco to produce, you know, basically a nuclear explosion like happened in, I think it was 98 or 99 when they took down the tobacco industry. And literally the tobacco industry in 2 years went from being the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. to being one of the most impotent and to this day. And I honestly don't know the status of that. And I should, you know, I just wrote a book about guns in the United States, but I didn't really look that much into that aspect of it. So maybe somebody listening knows the details of that and can call in and tell us. Or, you know, in the meantime, we'll keep an eye out for perhaps a good guest on that topic. But that is an excellent question, Ty. I'm sorry I don't have a concise answer for you. I wish I did. And frankly, if that's going on, by the way, we should all know that answer, which again is another testimony. Or even if it's not going on, we should all know that answer, because that's a testimonial, in my opinion, to the sad state of news in the United States. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday in just a moment. And welcome back, Jeanette, in Druryville, Virginia. Hey, Jeanette, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I'm really in Haines City, Florida.
Oh, how'd we get you in Virginia?
I know, that's what you said last time. I just wanted to tell you.
Okay, next time you call, be sure to tell Shira, you know, the person who answers the phone that she's got your address wrong, because it's in our database. Once somebody has called in once, they're in our database. I mean, we don't sell it, we don't share it or anything. It's just a convenience for the person answering the phone.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you about that forum with Comey.
Say it again.
The Comey forum where they talked.
Oh, I don't know about that. James Comey was participating in a public forum recently.
No, I don't mean a regular forum. I mean when they were the Comey thing. Well, I understand that the Republicans wanted that to happen.
And oh, you're talking about Comey being fired by Trump?
I'm talking about yesterday, the hearings.
Oh, you're talking about Michael Cohen. I'm sorry.
I
understand, Jeanette. I'm sorry. My apologies. What's up? Well, so, continue.
So, I want to know if you can tell me how come the Republicans asked for that to happen?
I think the Republicans were opposed to that because the first thing that happened was I think it was Jim Jordan, the head Republican guy, before Cohen was even allowed to speak, argued that the hearing shouldn't happen, and in fact several Republicans made arguments that the hearing should not be happening, and then afterwards the Republicans filed a formal complaint asking to throw Cohen in jail, as if that wasn't already happening, for not telling the truth in the hearing.
You know, I heard all that, but I think it's a big setup, because I can't tell you just where I heard from, that the Republicans are the ones that wanted that to happen anyway.
Well, it's not impossible that there are some Republicans, and I don't know if Justin Amash might be one of them. He certainly was not a Trump. He was the only Republican on the committee who didn't basically go out of his way to attack Cohen or to praise Trump. And
that's the question I'm going to be sure watching out for.
Yeah, he's a Republican from Michigan.
Maybe somebody else knows they can talk about it, because it's important if it really was.
I think there are a few Republicans. You know, he's been flushing them out of the party, right? You know, Bob Corker had to leave. Jeff Flake had to leave. Trump has been successful, and a number of members of the House of Representatives who were opposed to or didn't like Donald Trump got primaried or got kicked out. Trump has been very, very good at terrorizing and punishing Republicans who don't go along with him. But there are still a number of Republicans, particularly in the Senate, who are retiring. There's a couple who are retiring, and there's a couple who I think they're just reaching the end of their rope. They're just like, enough of this already. You know, it's like we've got to, at this is the point at which we stop. We go no farther than this. End of the rope. I wonder if that's an old lynching reference. Jeez, where do our metaphors come from? In any case, I think that there are a growing number of Republicans who are over it with Donald Trump, who have just said enough. And I hope that, Jeanette, your perspective is accurate. And I think it may well be. Time will tell. We'll find out. You know, the next year and a half is going to be real interesting. We'll be back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday. Welcome back. It's Anything Goes Friday, and Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm well.
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to more or less make a comment on what I feel that happened. I feel that hearing, that Michael Cohen hearing, actually literally ran Trump out of the country. And he ran, but this is what he did. He conned them again. He's a con man, because he conned the American people with this Jim Kunyu North Korea meeting, which he had no—he knew he wasn't going to do nothing.
Well, I'm not sure, man. I think he thought he was so brilliant, and Kim was such a pushover that he could just basically say, Kim, you know, we'd like to help you with a little economic development, and we'll dial back our sanctions if you'll just get rid of your nukes. As if Kim is going to do this, right? I mean, right. This is how delusional and how, frankly, stupid Donald Trump is. And it pains me to call the president of the United States stupid. And to the best of my knowledge, we've never had a president who was stupid. We've had presidents who were villainous. We've had presidents who were genocidal. We've had presidents who were evil. We've had presidents who, but stupid? Now we've got stupid in the White House. It's a tragedy, Maine.
But this is the kind that I feel that he did on the people, at least to get people talking about it so they wouldn't be fully on the Cohen thing.
Yeah.
And in 2 or 3 days, it's less talked about and even forgotten by some, his base, which is all that I feel that this was all about.
Yep.
He used the world stage in order to counter what was happening at that hearing.
I think you're right. Although what the Trumpets say is that the Democrats scheduled the Cohen hearings on the day that Trump was going to be in North Korea to steal his thunder, and they're all upset about that. But regardless, one of the things that I think is going to come out of the Cohen hearings, is that the news media, I have noticed in the last 48 hours that the news media has not been hanging on every word Trump says. Usually Trump tweets something, it becomes breaking news. Trump says something, it becomes breaking news. I haven't seen that. Now, it may be that Trump hasn't said anything or tweeted anything since he got home, but I'm pretty sure he has. And I think that whole, we've got to do Trump no matter what, he's the president of the United States, they now realize that we have a con man in the White House, a thug, a gangster, the head of a crime family who inherited the crime family from his father. I mean, literally an old world mobster. And I think that the media has figured that out, and they are not going to be playing his game any longer. At least I hope that's the case. Maine, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Rob in Akron, Ohio. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. So I wanted to ask you if you think the media's coverage of Venezuela has been sufficient, because the more I read about it and who exactly these protesters in the streets of Venezuela are, it kind of seems like it's the closest thing they have to their elite that are really against this Maduro protest, where it seems like the poor are the ones who are more so on the side, of the left-wing government over there in Venezuela. But our media doesn't seem like it does the best job in portraying it, because our media is obviously very pro-elite friendly. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think your analysis is accurate. I was reading this morning in, I think it was the New York Times, that right after we put sanctions on the Maduro government, this was like a year ago, year and a half ago, right after we put sanctions on them, their oil exports dropped by 40%. And because the that heavy oil refinery down in Texas, I think it's Texas, might be Louisiana, but right in the Gulf Coast, that's owned by the Koch brothers, or they have an interest in it in any case, that is designed to deal with this heavy oil, had been processing Venezuelan oil, and now with the pipeline from Canada, they can process the heavy oil that comes from the tar sands, and so they don't need the Venezuelan oil anymore. So with this. With the embargo or the sanctions on Venezuela, we stopped, or the Koch brothers stopped, buying the Venezuelan oil for their refinery, and it has really, really kneecapped Venezuela's economy. We took their economy down. We don't like, apparently, our government, or at least the current government, does not like left-wing governments, does not like socialist governments, does not like a government that says we own the oil under the land in and offshore in our country. They only like, our history has been. I mean, going back, overthrowing the Shah, or not the Shah, overthrowing Mossadegh and replacing him with the Shah in Iran when Mossadegh nationalized the oil. Overthrowing Saddam Hussein when he nationalized his oil. It's just like we have this long history of doing this, and I think that's what it's all about. And I think that, Venezuela has now the first or second largest reserves of oil in the world. And that, I believe, is really what this is all about going on. And our coverage, of course, doesn't reflect any of that, our news coverage. We'll be back. It's 27 minutes past the hour, coming up on 28 minutes past the hour. Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with your calls on Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Tara Therese in Seattle. Am I saying your name right?
You are. Thanks, Tom. Hey, first, I just want to say I've been listening to you at work now for 4 years, and I feel like I've earned a second college degree. So thank you.
You're welcome. my pleasure.
I wanted to respond to people talking about prescription prices. I get my prescriptions at Costco, and every time I go in, they say, aren't you using your insurance? And I say no, because it would be $30 per prescription per month. And at Costco, what I get for a three-month supply is often maybe $12, $13. So if people have access to a Costco and can get a membership, I urge them to check it out.
Now, Costco is the big group that competes with Sam's Club, only they actually pay their employees well and give them good benefits and have proved that that model can actually be, you know, work and be successful. I went into a Costco once. One of my brothers has a membership, and we were back in Michigan for a family picnic, and we went to Costco to get stuff for the picnic. And so I've been inside one Costco once, but I have no idea what it costs to join. Can you tell me about it?
$75 a year, maybe.
Okay, so it's in the neighborhood of Amazon Prime, basically.
Yeah. But the savings on the prescriptions are just phenomenal. Hmm. I mean, there's no way I would use my insurance. You know?
That's interesting.
I mean, and they're all generics, but sure. You can also go on their website and look up prices. So it's really a deal. So anyway, I urge your listeners to check it out.
Cool. Therese, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for the tip. That's a good one. Conrad in Ramona, California. Hey, Conrad, what's up?
I'm tearing my hair out, Tom.
Uh-oh, don't do
every
that.
Day
that's,
now.
That's not good for you.
Yeah. It's about two or three times a day now I hear the question being asked of Bernie or Pocan, well, how are we going to pay it? The free school, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
The first five words out of every progressive's mouth, the first five words need to be the way we did before.
Exactly.
And then you give in the details, you know, 74% tax rate on billionaires like Nixon had that, you know.
Yeah. So Nixon had a 91% tax rate. No, wait a minute.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It was 74%. No, Nixon was after LBJ. So it was 70 because LBJ dropped it down to 74% in like 67, something like that.
Right. I got two other quick ones.
Yeah, go for it.
We should never say the top 1%. We should say the elite 1%.
Excellent messaging, Conrad. Excellent messaging.
What's that?
Yep.
Thank you. And one more. What do we call Trump's base? Dead-enders.
Dead-enders, yes. Sadly. I mean, you look at these Trump rallies and you look at the interviews that the news feel compelled to do every time any kind of event happens, where they go into Trump country and they ask Trump people, well, you know, what do you think of Trump now? Well, he tried to do the best with North Korea. And it just makes me so sad. It's that these people have fallen under the spell of a cult leader and a con man. And cult leader is exactly what he is. Conrad, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. Elizabeth in Aptos, California. Hey, Elizabeth, excuse me, what's on your mind?
Hi there, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm so grateful for all the work you do and have been doing for so long. And I used to listen to you on a progressive station we had here, but they went away. So for several years, it's been the internet. But now we have a new public radio station here in Santa Cruz County that just started carrying your show.
Yep.
In the afternoons, KSQD 90.7.
Yep.
I called about this book that just jumped off the shelf at me in the library called Move Fast and Break Things by Jonathan Taplin, How Facebook, Google, and Amazon Cornered Culture and Undermined Democracy. And
I had him as a Conversations with Great Minds guest about 2 years ago, as I recall, when that came out. In fact, I'm pretty sure we did it out of the TV studios, the RT TV studios in Washington, D.C. It's almost certainly on our website, maybe at conversationswithgreatminds.com. But yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about, and I'm familiar with the book.
It's amazing because we all know about the privacy, but this approach about how all these players are libertarian, the taxes they don't pay, yep. and how they're in bed with the government and especially the Trumps, and it's like...
Oh, and Facebook starting out as Mark Zuckerberg's way of having men at Harvard rate the women?
I know, and there's also another book just out by Roger McNamee, who was very involved in the beginning of Facebook, and he got very upset at what was happening before the 2016 election. They wouldn't listen to him.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but it's called Zucked.
Yeah. I've seen interviews with him about it. He's doing a book tour right now. We should probably get him on.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. Good
one. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Elizabeth. And thanks for the plug for our new affiliate there in Santa Cruz. We're really happy to be on the air there, too. Another Pacifica station. William in Berlin, Wisconsin. Hey, William, what's up?
Hello. Honored to speak with you.
Thank you.
I would just like that. I just heard the caller about the Costco, and I do believe you can buy prescription drugs from Costco. The only thing you can buy without a membership, I think you can.
Okay.
Go in there. I've heard that.
Okay. Well, let's be sure before we put that out, because I don't want to be, getting people driving 10 miles in their car to find out that they got bad information. We need to fact check that, William. But that would be cool. That'd be great. If there was one near me, I would do it. Obi in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hey, Obi, what's up?
Hey, Tom. It's Obi in La Crosse.
Obi, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, next time you have somebody like John Nichols or somebody from Wisconsin on, basically the National Democrats have something that they can learn from the Wisconsin Democrats and the way the Wisconsin primary for governor in 2018 was conducted. At that time, we had a really large field, and there was something to like about everybody in the field. I used to say, I wish I could take all the good parts of each one and cobble them together into a super candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was everybody was very cordial, everybody was very respectful, and to the most part, that even extended to supporters, because we all had friends that were supporting somebody else. It was like there were a lot of good candidates. And
sure.
I think that's the case in the presidential race this time around. And if we can just, I look at the field and I don't see anybody that I wouldn't be able to enthusiastically vote for in 2020.
I agree. I agree.
So,
and there's a couple of message boards or a couple of websites that have message boards or blogs attached to them. Where the vitriol, the hatred that I've been seeing directed against Democratic primary candidates, usually Bernie Sanders, just shocking to me. And I'm wondering what percentage of those people are actually coming out of the Internet Research Bureau, are actually trolls.
There could be that, although I do see some Bernie hatred within our own county party here. So,
yeah, well, that's unfortunate.
But I always come with the philosophy that it's better to work together with people on the things that we agree on than to fight with them over the things that we disagree on.
I agree, and we just need to set all this stuff aside until we've got a candidate, and let's just get there. And one of the rules for this show now, informally, but I'm saying it now, I've said it before on the air, is if you want to call and talk about a Democratic primary candidate, if you can't say something good, don't say anything at all. We are not doing circular firing squads here.
Do you have time for a quick parable on activism?
Sure, go for it.
Activism can really be, and I'm talking about local, on the ground, in the trenches activism, where we have to go to these mundane meetings and dreary county halls and so on.
Yep.
But sometimes I think if I had access to a time machine, if I could hitch a ride on the TARDIS, I would go to the year 2000 and to West Palm Beach, and I would find the meeting where they were approving the butterfly ballot, and I would say, hey, take a look at this. Some people might get confused. And if I could just, show up and stand up and make a difference.
Yeah, was it 3,800 or 7,800 votes for Pat Buchanan that were almost certainly Al Gore votes?
And if somebody had done that, Gore would have won. He would not even have known that just showing up and making that tiny difference there changed the course of history.
Yeah.
What
I would do is I would go back a little farther back before that, to when Jeb Bush told Catherine Harris to get that list of convicted felons from Texas and compare their names to the voter registration lists in Florida and purge all those people, particularly people who have names that are very common in the African-American community, Washington, for example, 80% are black.
You're missing the bigger point, Tom. The point really is that you never know which, if you show up at these meetings and make a difference, you never know which time you're changing the course of history.
Oh, I get your point, Abby. What you're saying is that this was a decision that was made with Democrats in the room.
I don't know if that particular meeting happened. It's just basically it's a parable that if that did happen, it was just one of these dreary meetings with, you know, some county meeting with that nobody pays attention to, and it's just, you know, public officials in the front of a room going, you know, okay, let's do this, blah blah, and on we go.
Yeah.
You know,
that if you almost wonder if that design was something that a Republican had come up with the idea that it would cost Al Gore votes. I mean, I'm just wondering out loud. It's conspiracy theory 101. I probably shouldn't, but Abby, thank you for the call. Fascinating stuff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman program. Coming up on 15 minutes before the hour, we'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. And welcome back. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky. Been a while. What's up?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great.
Yeah, I told you back in 2015 that Trump was a criminal organization.
Yes, you did.
Now I'm telling you, he's going to go after Venezuela because he just heard that they're the number one oil reserves in the world.
I agree.
And the closer they get to boxing him in, he's going to start a war with Venezuela, which is going to drag in Russia and the Ukraine and all the rest of them.
I agree.
So be with the guy. You got to get him out of here. And Matt Gaetz, he's the dumbest stone in the driveway.
How do you know that?
Because he says ignorant things like the biggest threat to the U.S. is them coming over the southern border.
Yeah. I don't think he's dumb, Corky. I think he's mean, nasty, vicious, spiteful little man. And I don't mean little in a physical sense.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't have the intelligence to be in the job he's in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you tell me I got to worry about my kids here in New York because a Mexican came over the southern border? What is wrong with you?
Yeah, no, it's spot on. Corky, you're right. It's crazy. Thanks a lot for the call. Nancy in Mount Vernon, Washington. Hey, Nancy, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching us on YouTube.
Oh, you bet. I'm calling in regard to information that Sheriff Mack shared, I think it was Monday's program, about there only being four county sheriffs going to follow the recently passed gun regulation laws.
In Washington State, yes.
Right. I believe that's inaccurate.
Okay.
I think it's closer to seven and possibly eight.
Well, that's good news.
I don't know where he got his figures.
Yeah, well, I think I was the source of those numbers, and I was using one of the news services. I don't recall which one, but still seven or eight. There's over 30 sheriffs in Washington State,
right,
aren't there?
It doesn't mean it's okay that they don't. The rest don't.
Yeah.
But what struck me is he pulled this number four out, and I'm going, wait a minute. I live in a county that's going to enforce that regulation. I'm next to counties that are going to enforce it.
Right.
And going all the way down, you know, I'm not sure if Thurston County is, but if Thurston is, that's at least eight counties.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense, and I'm not sure that a complete survey or census has been taken, Nancy, but, you know, the fact that any sheriff would say the law of the land has changed, and I'm going to refuse to enforce the new law. I mean, the last time we heard that kind of thing was after the Brown v. Board, as I recall, decision. And, well, I suppose, you know, with regard I think it was Brown v. Board was the last time we saw that kind of a so-called popular uprising, you know, where sheriffs said, and politicians as well said, that they did not believe that the or they were unwilling to enforce the law or support the even support the law, but enforce the law. And
right.
It's just wrong. It's just as wrong as it was back in 1955.
It is.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for the call. And thanks for watching us on YouTube. We'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. And anything goes Friday. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and a couple of stories that I wanted to talk to you about as well. There's just, I mean, so much incredible news going on. William Barr's son-in-law. Just think about how bizarre this is. The son-in-law of the Attorney General of the United States. And it just landed a job advising Trump on legal issues. And by the way, it's Anything Goes Friday. My apologies for not taking your calls. My call screener has crashed again. We've got to get our engineer in here and figure out what the heck's going on. So I doubt I'll be able to take any more calls today. Later today, William Barr, this is from Vanity Fair. And later today, well, actually, this is from a couple of days, from a couple of weeks ago. Later today, William Barr is expected to be he was confirmed. But the Barr family is intent on gaining the nation's trust in order to avoid thorny work situations. Barr's son-in-law, Tyler McGauhey, McGauhey, will be leaving his job in the Justice Department for a new gig that will provide even more opportunities for conflicts of interest, this time of the Russian variety. CNN reports that McGauhey, the husband of Barr's youngest daughter, has been hired as an attorney in the White House counsel's office, where he'll, quote, advise the president, the executive office, and the White House staff on legal issues concerning the president and the presidency. This is nuts. This is just nuts. I mean, where do you go with that? What do you do with that? Oh, a crazy alert, pigeon alert. Not quite. Farmers in India are fighting tooth and nail the scourge of opium-addicted parrots. Seriously, the birds are becoming intoxicated. This is legally grown opium in Madhya Pradesh. 38,000 hectares of licensed poppy cultivation. Parrots are becoming intoxicated, crashing into trees and branches, being found laying dazed in nearby fields. After taking the drug, after the effects wear off, they fly away, but the farmers are freaking out. It's seriously cutting into their productivity, the productivity of their poppy crops. And they're out there day and night trying to get rid of the parrots, and they say, one of them said, we have tried making loud sounds, we've tried using firecrackers, nothing has helped. These birds are seriously addicted. Well, and the Sackler family wasn't even involved. I mean, you know, it's amazing. Meanwhile, I believe I shared this with you already, that the Fred and Cindy Warmbier, parents of Otto Warmbier, the young man who was viciously murdered by the North Korean regime, that they have basically said enough. And here's the actual quote. You know, after Donald Trump said that he believes Kim. Oh, there's a lot of people in the jail. You know, Kim didn't realize he was being beat to death. They said, we have been respectful during this summit process. Now we must speak out. Kim and his evil regime are responsible for the death of our son, Otto. Kim and his evil regime are responsible for unimaginable cruelty and inhumanity. No excuses or lavish praise can change that. That is a solid one. Interesting information out of CPAC. You know, the Conservative Political Action Conference is going on right now in Washington, D.C. I have broadcast my show from there in years past, and we thought about doing it this year. We decided not to at the end of the day. I have a feeling CPAC is kind of going down in flames, but who knows? It's turned into all Trump all the time. The last one I was at was when Mitt Romney was running for president. They were running around with flipper, you know, dressed like dolphins and things like that because he was flip-flopper. But if you want to know who the conservatives are afraid of, in the coming presidential election. Probably the most accurate metric of the guy who is the man or woman that Donald Trump is most afraid of facing in a general election. The way to find out would be to find out who is being attacked at CPAC over and over and over by speaker after speaker after speaker, particularly the people who are in tight with the Trump administration. And it's not even close. That person is Bernie Sanders. He's virtually every speaker. Brandon Morris, this is from The Guardian, right? Brandon Morris, wearing a MAGA cap, he says, the favorite in the Democratic race is Bernie Sanders because the way he makes socialism sound. Most citizens don't know how the system works. Once I tell them, they see it'll fall apart. And then another guy says, I'm against socialism because I see it as a form of slavery. The rich will get richer, the poor will get poorer. Cory Booker and Kamala Harris talk about Medicare for all, and that will kill doctors' incentives to work hard. Look at Cuba. Wait a minute. I've been to Cuba. Their medical system works really well. They have lower infant mortality than the United States. They have fewer maternal deaths than in the United States. It's just incredible. They are going after Elizabeth Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and they are going after Kamala Harris. It appears that those are the, and Cory Booker occasionally, but you know, right across the board, the one that they seem to be going against the most aggressively is Bernie. Finally, Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State, you know, a good and decent guy. Louise and I, back years ago, back when Jay Inslee was in the House of Representatives, had dinner with him in Seattle, and I was very impressed by him. Great guy. He has announced that he's running for president, and he said he's doing it entirely on climate change. I would have counseled him if he had asked to say, the Green New Deal will put our economy back together, and it will help with health. It'll get all those cancer-causing pollutants out of our environment, plus it'll save the world. But we'll see where he goes with this. I wish him the very best. He's a good guy. Thanks so much for being with us today and every day this week. I'll be back from Minneapolis before Monday, so we'll see you here, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it, and have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.